How do you do that? What signal do you send to the rest of the society? How should we take what you tell us when you say that people are flouting the law? This is the same administration that is speaking to young people in the schools today about violence and about doing the right thing. How can politicians behave as though there is one law for them and a completely different law for the rest of us?
Ms. Ellis, I don't know what you mean by one law for them, because all of us are subject to the same law, but I'll tell you something.
But you hear everybody, including people associated with the government, saying that aspects of the legislation or a key aspect of the legislation will trample on people's liberties.
But, Ms. Ellis, that's because they never read the Dallas Court report that came from Jamaica. What happened in Jamaica, then whole communities were hostage by the criminals. Many criminals were large and in charge.
We agree. We agree that we have a problem and we don't want it to escalate to that.
Yes.
But you know what the criticism has been about? Mm-hmm. It has been about the process, because you have a problem. There's a dilemma. We don't want to have a situation where people can hide their guns all about this place and be able to go for them when they are ready to make life uncomfortable for people in the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
We agree on that, all right? But you also recognize that you are hemmed in by certain constitutional provisions. So in these circumstances, the process to effect change has to be different. That's all people are saying. Give it more dialogue. I know people are going to say we've had the problem for a while, but it seems as though the process is the issue here.
Ms. Ellis, give me a little piece, man. You're talking all the time. Give me a little piece.
You're talking all the time. You were just talking about something else altogether, and I listened to you.
Yeah, but I know that. But something, I get the impression that you like me to listen to you, but you don't want to listen to me. I think Barbans have to remember, we have to let history be our guide. You were wrong, I'm sure, when they had that situation in Grenada, when law and order had completely broken down, and they had a call in the United States to restore law and order. These are things that I believe the hierarchy are trying to head off, that if something happens, you don't have to call for outside help. You have things in place where you can... I haven't heard anything about bringing in the army yet, which is probably a good thing. But remember that in Jamaica, they had to bring in the army, the armed forces. And I believe what they're trying to do now is to give the police enough power, legal power, to take certain types of action to stop things from escalating to a point where the police ain't no more use and you got to call the army. And that's all that I'm going to say about that right now. The final point I want to make, sir, this point about the school children, sir, did not start with the school children. The good book says, I don't know if you read it, it says the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. And that is very accurate in this case. What is happening in the schools did not start in the schools. We have had a situation recently where certain union leaders have adopted an attitude of aggression and confrontation with the authorities. Every time they have a dispute, it is a confrontation. Call up the teachers, call up this person, shut the school. All those things impact on the psyche of children. I went to school, I'm sure you did too, from 5 to 19. All those years, we have never had a call up of teachers. We've never seen it. We've never had protests and that kind of thing. All of a sudden, that has become part of the cultural mosaic of Barbados. And it is hurting the children. When teachers walk up to the classroom and leave the children unattended, the children feel uncared for, they feel resentment, and they get angry. Then you find the teachers now getting in at their level now, and the union bosses seeing the ministry as their enemy. The teachers now are very aggressive with the children, and the children are very aggressive with the teachers. And there you have this problem, and now the children are turning on each other. This thing started at the top. And unless we can return to the days when civilized people in the union, civilized minds in the public service, or whoever the teachers or whoever can sit down around a table and negotiate and bargain and find a peaceful solution, Twitter will continue to emulate this attitude of aggression and fighting one another and hating one another. Because that's what that culture is. Some of these children just dislike other people just for the sake of, because they feel that people are don't like them or they're not well disposed to them and so on. And this is why we are seeing what we are seeing. And I hope that the Ministry of Education, in its wisdom, will not only go in there and sit down and spend hours with unions talking. I hope they will consult with the senior students of the school and the senior prefect, because they have the information that they're looking for.
Okay, thank you. We got to go. Sit down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes.
Good morning. We just lost that call. I apologize.
Can you get in?
Hello? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
Blessed be my brother. This is the first time for the new year that I am getting a chance to speak with you.
Okay.
So there are a number of topics and things I may want to touch upon. The first one would be that I would like to heartily congratulate Chelsea Tuak. As you know, I've been one of her ardent supporters on the program in her surfing pursuits. And I'm very pleased that she has reached the heights that she has reached. But now we are watching another Chelsea, which will be Chelsea Ruitt. I'd also like to congratulate Randy Harris of becoming the Administrator of the Year, because administration seems to be one of the areas in which there's a dearth and a paucity in Barbados. To a more substantive matter, you are with me, Mr. Ellis?
What is it?
To another substantive matter, at least to me. If you were to call, let me provide some background to the comment. A youngster in the area has decided we want to create a green space in the area. This is within the environs of Rihanna Drive, lower down Westbury Road, and he has cleaned the space. But there are a number of direct cars on the spot, and we would like to really clean it further and make it a green space. So you might be surprised to learn, Mr. Ellis, that were you to call the SSA about removal of the red cars, you may be very surprised to learn that they will tell you we don't do that. You will then be subsequently referred to the Environmental Protection Department, who will also tell you that we don't do that either. So I am asking you now, Mr. Ellis, can you find out for me who removes the old cars off the landscape so that I can contact them and have them move the ones that have proven to be an eyesore in my community? And this effort was inspired by the work that was done on Brandon Beach by one person, by a chap we call upon Tom, Mr. Aileen from Paris Cap. And now it appears almost like a fixture on Wednesdays when the tourist boats come in. It seems as though they look forward now to going to Brandon. If you pass the Spring Garden Highway, one can only acknowledge that it seems that Brandon Beach has been veritably transformed, and it will be largely to this chap's effort. So if, Mr. Ellis, you can find out for me who is the agency responsible for moving the derelict cars, and while you are at it, there used to be a program whereby the old cars will be drained of the oil and used as a reef.
There's a lot of wind blowing into your microphone, and it is creating a problem.
Yeah, I know that happens. And it is rather windy today, if I do say so myself.
Sure.
But I hope it is a little better now. But I have been wondering if they still use the old cars to build that reef. It has been proven to improve the fish breeding and fish stock. So I am very keen to find out, A, who is the agency responsible for moving the cars, and B, if they still build the reef with them. Thank you so much for having me, Mr. Ellis. Okay. I'll ever get some time.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
In terms of the police, I feel that they should be given further training in terms of this app so that they become accustomed to, I know it's a rough thing and sometimes you have to be harsh, but you should be able to be harsh and still deal with people with respect. They need to realize that sometimes when they're dealing with the public, they should not necessarily stoop down to the level of the public to use the same type of language that they are using, which sometimes aggravate the situation. I figure that that should help in making people feel a little bit more, let me put the word, welcoming to a police coming to your place to carry out a warrant. Because I'm sure if you go to the Heights, you may not have it, but when you come down in the other section, you not flash the paper and you barge through without even giving the person, let's say, the opportunity to catch themselves. So that is my concern, and that is what I feel should happen to them before they are let loose. Because if some of them don't like me, they can come out for a search warrant because they have the right, and then trample my thoughts.
Are you concerned about this amendment at all?
Yes. That's why I'm saying
that.
Why you're
speaking like
that? If they push this thing ahead and the police, some of them go in the manner in which they approach people, we are going to have an aggressive society who will fight fire with fire. That is my
concern. But don't we already have a pretty aggressive society from what you're seeing? And look at the main factor that is influencing the government's reaction, which is the crime situation at times, the increased use of guns, and, you know, that matters to you?
Yes. Are we really handling our children in a manner that will make them gentle to us?
Okay.
This is something that no happened.
Fair enough, but then
this is something that was growing from
parents. How would you suggest that? How would you suggest that government assists in dealing with it? Because it is not just a government issue.
No, my thing is, it's all funny, but I feel when parents are pregnant, you should not go to the full term unless you are given some instructions as to how to deal with the new environment you're going into. Because too many children are having children. They are giving them everything but love. And the children have become accustomed to the computer, the this and the next, and the parents are at work trying to make money. And there's no connection but the electronics. And so the children lack that, let's say, togetherness of family or let's say somebody to sound off on. And so we as older people, they hate us. They have no respect for you. All they want to do is give me the money out of your hand and here's a box.
But we are good at identifying the problem. The difficulty is in trying to find a solution.
Train the parents. We train the teachers.
Okay.
Let the teachers have a little bit more caring outlook. Where they, sometimes in the past, you could see a child that needs something happen at home, and you can just call it aside and try to nurture it along. It may not be bright, but that little word will help them along. We need to be a little bit more caring, which will help the situation. Money is not all.
I think that what has been missing in all of this, though, is that I know that there are some people who have been associated with the police over the years who have long argued that you must have a multi-pronged approach to dealing with the problems that confront the society. This piece of legislation carries the stick, but how can you use policing to carry the carrot as well? In other words, there was a period when we used to hear a lot more about the police juvenile liaison scheme, for instance. We had a period when we heard a lot more about community policing. This debate that is taking place right now is devoid of that kind of focus. So it is, give us the power to be able to search, give us the power to be able to cordon off, give us the power to impose curfews. And we believe that if you give us those powers, we will be able to address the issue of the guns and the knives and that sort of thing. But what about the intent? how do we, I mean, I realized that there was something circulating on social media yesterday, a picture of a lot of knives which allegedly were found at one of the secondary schools.
Mm.
Now, if these youngsters had access to guns, I expect that they would have used them instead. There was one where somebody took a piece of stick and converted it into a weapon with sharp edges. Okay, like large razor blades or something like it on the stick that they had. Which means that, as I said to some of the people working with me, I said, you know, that is untapped creativity and ingenuity. It's gone in the wrong direction, you know.
Idle hands.
Right, but how do you take a youngster like that who has come up with that idea and get that person to channel it in the right direction? So these are the real issues
well, you
that
know,
confront
what
us.
The children want and not what the parents want them to do. And if some of them may not be book children, stop telling children, you're going to get this Yahtzee, you're going to get the next senator, and the children have the books Yahtzee, and then still going to get the skills, and they're getting the jobs because they have two. We too like to tell the children, you're going to do this, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer. Find out what they want to do. Give them the tools to work it, and if it don't work, you cannot say you did not try, but do not leave them alone on things. Let's say weapons have always been at schools. Is it time to have a metal detector at the gate that when you come through it will sound off and you stop and search?
The Minister of Education has disagreed with that. He has dismissed it.
Are you a rare ignorant idea?
What's that?
Teach the teachers some basic self-defense skills so that the children don't kill them, then we get first chance.
No. You're trying to fight.
It sounds funny. But most of the time, a teacher will go to block
the basics,
a fight or so.
Basic self-defense skills are required, I suppose, generally, not just among teachers. But at the end of the day, the undercurrent of all of this, we often go in the direction of fighting fire with fire in Barbados.
Yeah.
You realize that?
So
put
now
some
we
lashes
have to be
in you and that sort of thing. For everything. The problem is that the societies that have been doing exactly that and it has not worked. It really has not worked. Okay?
What areas can we provide in terms of skills for persons? Only when they go to prison to do the art and to do this and to do the net. Somebody that have some skills maybe can go on the block and do an art class for free and see if they could try to tell those persons who are not employed. Look, I'll teach you this for a thing, and if you get, we'll put up some art out here and see if that will work. Find out what it is the people interested in the area. At one time, I heard some fellas say they give away weed whackers and they assign each man with a weed whacker to a school. He will have to go every month to that school, clean it, whatnot, maintain it, and they give him a berry, and they felt good. That went in a different way.
All right, thank you very much.
One half a thing. Soon they'll be giving residents in the housing areas the deeds or the papers for the houses.
Yes.
Now, when you get the paper for these houses, what's going to happen with the well that is common to all the people?
You have touched a most important point, ma'am, because the devil is in the detail. It is all well and good for them to come and tell you that the land will now be vested in you. Or
and your taxes.
Yeah, well.
And the lighting and fix.
The wiring
is not standard wiring. It gone in the wall and it in conduit.
Okay.
Okay? So the thing about it is, if we are interested in our safety, the fine print now will have to tell the tale, because I'm very conscious about safety. And if you're giving me something just to get rid of it and get me from quarreling that the well block up and everybody, I may have a humbug neighbor who will say, I want my well fixed now, and you can't get in by me to get it fixed. That will bring confusion. So you mean you're giving you the host to have confusion with other people?
No, you have raised the most important issues surrounding this deal that they believe they're giving you. They have given you only part of the story, but they have not given you the full story yet. You must press them to explain the full details associated with this transfer.
You need it. Okay, you say you want to hold meeting and you hear trimmings, but you don't get all.
Well, you need it. I will recommend this to you all. You have a lot of people who live in these neighborhoods who are quite gifted and talented and intelligent people. The best thing that you can do is form yourselves into groups where you can start to ask the right questions and organize yourselves. Do not sit down and wait for politicians to do everything for you, because sometimes when you think they're doing it for you, ultimately they're just doing it for themselves. You are, you got a whole set, you got kids who have done very well. You yourselves are capable of doing better than this. Get together in the different communities. You don't need a lot of people to do that. Ask
people,
the right questions.
People be frightened.
Frightened for what? At the end of the day, if you don't ask the right questions, you can get taken advantage of you.
Right. But Barbadian like
that.
Somebody to go forward as a fall guy. If something good happen, they're going to run along and holler, yeah, we there.
Well, there should be enough of you who are prepared to be fall guys. But from the time I heard it, I remember we were talking about this very issue some weeks ago. And I was asking questions about what about all of the legal ramifications, the things that were holding up this process. This was spoken about a long time ago. So there must be real hurdles. Otherwise, you would have had this in your hands long time, and you know.
The issues
associated
with time right now, right?
Yeah.
So get it in now, cause you won't get the chance to swing round. Near February or March. You aren't thinking.
Well, you thinking though. Thank you very much. that is really important that you are the person who must be thinking about the full implications of it so that you do not end up feeling as though you were fooled by anybody. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning, Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Hello, very good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you doing today?
I'm well, and you?
I'm good, thanks. My name is Donald, and thanks for taking my call. I want to first thank you for going out of your way last year, Independence Day, in fact, when it was raining the way it was, and helped me to reconnect with some friends close in your area.
Okay.
I never got a chance to thank you personally, so I want to do that now.
Or you were the man who was lost?
Yes, in your area.
And was eventually found, or eventually found his way?
Yes.
And I remember that, yes.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And it is said that radio works, so this is another request. There's a gentleman who calls you periodically. He said that he's challenged. I think he indicated he's like 70 years old with some eye problems. And I want to leave my number so that I can, or he can call me, or, you know, call into the front desk and get my number. If I can leave it off the air, if that's...
Yes, you can do that.
All right.
Okay.
One other thing, I want to talk on a number of issues, but not on this occasion. So if, you know, I'm back on holiday and I would love to have an opportunity to talk about some of the issues that's going on. So before you head back, if I can find some time.
So where do you live normally?
In Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. All right. Well, how long have you been here now?
Well,
on this occasion?
I came in last a week ago, or should say 2 weeks ago, to celebrate my sister's 80th birthday. That went exceptional. And, you know, before I go back, which is probably in another 2 weeks, I'd love to find some time to, you know, either calling or...
But this is the time to call and talk. I mean, you don't have a lot of time. So, you know, you first of all, give me your own assessment of what you're seeing in Barbados as somebody who's been coming back here. How often have you been back here in recent times?
Well, I was back as I indicated.
You come every year?
Around the independence time. I kind of get back a couple of times a year.
Precisely. So what is the Barbados that you are seeing now?
Well, there's some issues. I want to compliment, if I can briefly talk about it, the Fair Trading Commission for at least pumping the brakes on the sale of BNTCL. It's a big issue for me, and I think that they did the right thing. I saw the editorial earlier this week and thought that I'm not sure who is doing the due diligence on that. I know that the parties who is looking to buy, I'm certain that they did due diligence, but I don't think that that the other side, the government, seemed to have been doing or have done due diligence. The BNTCL is not, in my opinion, a company. I see it as an industry. I mean, it's the oil, it's the natural gas. It owes Barbados nothing. It provides foreign reserves every year. And although tourism is considered the big foreign reserves earner, the oil is without doubt a big foreign reserve earner, and it is not what in the business, it's not what you make, it's what you get to keep. And I think that too much money is being spent on, you know, the oil importation and all that, when we could be here developing our own oil. We've got some...
I don't understand how that relates to BNTCL. The issue of BNTCL has to do with the distribution of petroleum products.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with searching for oil and buying oil from abroad or anything like that. This is the distribution arm of the whole process.
I get that, but I would like to think that we can start developing our oil here. There's a number of sugarcane factories that have closed down. I'd like to see...
We're putting a lot of focus there on alternative energy, using the sun in particular.
And I get that, but, I mean, what we've got is our natural resource.
Barbados has limited supplies of oil onshore. The thrust would be in offshore drilling, and as you are quite aware, as long as the price of oil is too low, people are not going to be that involved in offshore drilling. The incentive is not as strong.
And that's what we are led to believe.
So who's supposed to do it?
I would think that if the administration, I neglect to say the government because, you know, it's from administration to administration. The government is the people. But if the administration go to or, you know, get in touch with one of those sovereign companies, who does this? I mean, the Emirates. This is one source of money that you can speak to them.
I want to assure you, sir, that Barbados has been in contact with companies to explore offshore drilling over the years in the last administration. Mm-hmm. And I've heard some talk of this with this current administration. But I suspect very much that with oil having dropped to $40 or under per barrel at some stage recently, that has been the great disincentive for people to explore it. But please, don't leave with the impression that Barbados has not been involved in that kind of discussion. But yeah, I got to leave you now. I have to leave you now.
All right. Thanks again for taking the call. And again, should I stay on the line and leave my number?
Yes, do so. Okay. Thank you. Now, you've seen these images that were circulating yesterday about weapons found at the school, the Grantley Adams Memorial School. And you certainly, if you are a student, an old scholar, a teacher, a parent, or somebody at that school, I suppose you don't even have to limit it to being associated with that school. What are your thoughts on the matter? How do you think we should handle this, not only in relation to any one school, but across the board? What are your concerns and suggestions? We want you to share them with us by calling this number, 256-6397. 256-6397. And we're going to be using that number quite a lot to get your feedback. Generally speaking, if anything happens in your community and you need to get that information to us here at Starcom Network News, we would encourage you to use that number, 256-6397. We've been trailing it quite a bit, but it is aimed ultimately at trying to improve the contact with you out there in the community. We have a reputation for being in the forefront with the news, and that has been driven to a large extent by communication between ourselves and you, the members of the public. So we're just reinforcing the fact that we want you to keep us in the know, and we will continue to be responsive to those things that are happening in our community that more people in Barbados ought to know about. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
It's still morning. It's 11:36.
I call on a very important issue, but I know that you made an error in your early speech, and I know that you need to correct that.
What's that?
You said we as politicians in a very early speech, early in your, but I heard that, but that's not Mr. Ellis. Mr. Ellis is not really what he's saying. Probably he's thinking of something, and he mentioned that. So you can correct that as you go on, right?
Well, I can't recall saying it, so you can.
When you play back, you would really. But it's just by the side. Now, Mr. Ellis, I'm concerned because I'm involved a little bit in what I'm going to speak to you about, and I believe that this is really disheartening. Every death, there's a cause, there's a reason. I'm sure that's why you have something which is known as a death certificate. There's something which you know as a coroner's certificate. I'm speaking on a matter, sir, that I hope the Ministry of Health, I'm not saying the minister, I'm saying the Ministry of Health, I'm hoping that the funeral directors of Barbados are listening, and I'm also hoping that the various constabulary is listening. This is based on the fact of a person who died in October of, related to me, in October of 2016. And today, that person's family have not received a death certificate or a cause of death. Now, I'm saying that this is frightening. It would mean that that person was buried in Barbados without a cause of death, without a death certificate. The death certificate, as you know, Mr. Ellis, is extremely important in terms of continuing business on behalf of the deceased or on behalf of yourself. You need that death certificate in order to continue to process whatever is need to be processed. And 2 years after is extremely annoying. I know that you collect the body from the hospital. It goes to the place where it may be kept. Before that body is buried, there must be a death certificate. I also know that in the case where there is a suspect death, then that the coroner provides the certificate and the cause of death. In this case, I am saying that up to today, as I talk to you minutes right now, that the coroner, this person died in October of 2016, and today is 2018, and up to today, the person died at the psychiatric hospital. Up to today, the coroner has not provided the cause of death to the undertaker. Up to today, has not provided the cause of death, but the undertaker could not keep the body, which you know, because the more that he keeps that body in his parlor or in his funeral home, that every day is paid for. Some undertakers will do it. But I'm calling on the Ministry of Health, Mr. Ellis. I'm calling on the constabulary, and I'm calling at least on the funeral directors of Barbados, because it's a known fact that some of these funeral directors and barbers are burying bodies before having the cause of death. And some of them are skeptical of burying these bodies because somewhere along the line it may be contagious bacteria or whatever, but the attendant in that funeral establishment has to prepare that body for burial. And it's not fair to the funeral director. It's not fair to at least the person who's preparing that body. And the reason for this, why some bodies are buried early, I was told, and I researched this, that you cannot keep the bodies long because it's an expense for the family. And the sooner you can get the bodies buried, then obviously this is...
But I think that's understood. And
right.
So I think the point has been well made already, that it is something that needs to be addressed in this particular case. Yeah. This is not widespread, I hope.
Well, I'll tell you, as soon as I put down this phone, there are going to be people who are likely to get in if they can get it, and tell you that they have had to bury a relative without the death certificate given to them or without the cause
well,
of death.
Well, that's speculation on your part. What you do know is that in this specific case, this has been the concern, and I sincerely hope that... I mean, have you been able to call the ministry itself and ask questions about this? Or
an attorney was brought into it, and let's get a little...
Well, you didn't... Prior to coming here to put it on the air...
Yes.
Actually called the ministry? You followed up at that level?
I followed up, Mr. Ellis.
And what happened?
The position is that and I should say this because... and I shouldn't say it. When the coroner who was there at the time was asked for the certificate cause of death, the coroner told my family, that they will not be issuing it. They told the police.
The question is why, though? The issue, it is one thing to hear that, but the why matters.
The laws of Barbados, Mr. Ellison, you know and I know, right, that there's a reason for death. And you cannot cremate a body in this country unless all areas of concern have been put in place. And there's a cause of death, that certificate, and there's a death. When you die sudden in your home, the body cannot remove from that place unless...
Listen, hold on a minute. I got a funeral director on the phone.
Right. Bring him in.
Yes, sir.
Yes, good morning. I don't know what...
You want to identify yourself?
Yeah, my name is James Wilson. I'm from Dungs and Wilson in Eagle Hall.
Yes.
Hi, James.
I don't know what the problem is with that case that is being spoken about, but I'd like to talk about burying without certificates. It's impossible to someone to be buried with the... In other words, let me start again. It's most likely in most cases people will be buried without a death certificate. It does take time to have a death certificate, and we cannot wait to have a death certificate to have a burial.
And therefore, it's not unusual.
No, it's not unusual. It's not unusual. It's unusual for it to go on for a month, 2 months, 3 months, or 6 months. But the normal case is that unless someone is seen a physician within a 24, 48-hour period, and the physician decides, because of convenience, he knows the history, then it's impossible, he will write the certificate. If it's a cremation, it will be done very quickly as well, because cremations are done, because of religion, in a short space of time. Have to be.
James, you know,
most of us in Barbados, most funerals that are held in Barbados, there are no certificates written at the time. There's a promise to have the certificate, but the certificates are not written on time because they have to be written and they have to be registered. And that whole process takes at least a week or more.
All right, James, I respect you.
If the police suspect that there's something unusual, then the coroner will issue a certificate eventually, but it's a coroner's case, and it can only be sorted out, the certificate, et cetera, after the postmortem, and after the sentence, you have to have a coroner's inquiry, but you cannot wait until that's done to have the burial.
This lady says to me that this person says, my mother died in November 2017, was buried on the 6th of December 2017, and to date, they don't have the death certificate. So it has taken much longer. So they say here, we are diving through hoops trying to get it. An autopsy was done, and still no one seems to know cause of death.
Well, you know, if the autopsy is done, that means the coroner has the information. And
no.
The funeral home has to chase the coroner, the system, to make sure that the certificate is issued to the family. Because, as you know, you cannot complete your business, you cannot complete your legal business. Even if you want to change your telephone, if you want to change your car, one has to produce a death certificate.
How much of an irritant is this proving to be for relatives of deceased people in Barbados?
It's a big irritant. What happens in Barbados is that when people die, whether it's at the hospital or at home, well, mostly at home, and they issue the certificate very quickly. At the hospital, the doctors there say, we will issue the certificate, but let's try to save the people who need saving first of all. Other countries, England, America, Germany, Japan, when people die, the priority is after if Joe Blow died, we must issue the certificate at the same time or within a 24-hour or 48-hour period. Take the time and write the certificate. That's the system in place in most countries. In Barbados, they do not take it as a priority. They think about saving lives. But we need to have a system in Barbados when people die, certificates should be issued in no less than 48 hours. There's no reason. Sometimes you hear the physician has gone on holiday, the physician has gone abroad, that's fine. But before the physician goes abroad, the physician should write the certificate.
Here's another one. The same thing happened to my family. My sister died suspiciously at the QEH about a year ago, and to date, we have been unable to get the coroner's report as we requested a post-mortem through the coroner. It is a fact.
Okay, but did they get a death certificate or a coroner's report? There's more than one thing. There's a death certificate. There's a cause of death, of course, that says where the person died. A coroner's report is a report that if you have a legal situation, is much more detailed how the person died, how heavy they were, why they died, if they were stabbed, where they were stabbed, how many inches. That's a lot more technical.
Yes.
And it is available, but it's usually available through the police or through the attorney.
And what complicates the matter for them, therefore, is that because of the suspicion that they have, they ask for the coroner's report. And that takes a bit longer.
Well, they have to chase. I understand that. Well, they have to keep chasing. The attorney has to get off his or her desk, I should say, and chase the hospital.
Is that a problem? Is that a problem in Barbados? That the attorneys appear not to get up off their desk, as you say, and pursue the matter? Is that a general complaint?
It can be a bit of a problem, you know. It can depends on the attorney. But then again, the family has to keep pushing. We need to have a system in place where, as I said a little earlier, at QEH, for example, if someone dies, the certificate should be written within a 48-hour period. Hospitals should be working. Some people say, I'm tired, this and that, but a physician should work a little earlier, even late if he has to make sure the family have the certificate, because sometimes, a lot of cases, families live abroad. They need to come from Trinidad, they need to come from India, they need to come from America to attend the funeral. And then, in most cases, they need to have a certificate to prove that the person died. Although funeral homes usually write letters saying based on what it is, they will be available as soon as it's available, they will get it.
Okay.
But they need to have these certificates written faster.
Let me see if Mark Williams, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. No, James, I've listened to you clearly, and you agree to what I said, in the sense that you admit that the two certificates, one from the coroner if necessary, and the death certificate. I am of a particular position here that this person, you said in 2 weeks to a month, I am in particular position here, Mr. Wilson, that this person died in 2016, was buried on the 25th of October 2016. And somewhere along the line, that the whole process and is projecting a cause as far as getting certain elements of the business straightened out. You know, Mr. Wilson, and I know, because we spoke about this already, that you can accommodate the families in an early burial if necessary. We know this. We also know that you just said that it relates to the fact that the death certificates are retarded because of situations. But don't you think that the funeral directors and barbers who have encountered this situation over and over, which caused you to be breaking the law of burying bodies if necessary and then getting a certificate, I feel that you should be more serious with this, Mr. Wilson, that whether you're going to help the families out in terms of burying to save costs because the body is kept at the funeral, that the department responsible for issuing the death certificate, it should be MUSD.
Okay. Your response, Mr. Wilson?
I didn't hear what he said. My radio's off.
Oh, my apologies. Okay. Well, basically, I think he's reinforcing what you said earlier, though, that there needs to be some priority attached to this.
But there's another part that has to be added.
Yes.
When we have a death certificate, the next stage is to have it registered at the registration office, which is a court.
And what happens there?
What happens there is sometimes you get a certificate whether the person died in St. John, of the died in Bridgetown, whether the died in St. Joseph. When it comes to having it issued from the registration office, it does take some time. And I don't know why in 2018 it should take such a long time.
How much time?
It can take a week. It can take 2 weeks. You know, it depends on the schedule. I think they also need to have more staff at the registration office, and I think they need to work longer hours. There's really a problem in doing business in Barbados. That is the basic problem. Doing business in Barbados is really heartbreaking. It takes a long time to do almost nothing, you know.
It's the kind of thing that could kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
But how computerized are they?
They're computerized.
Yes.
But the system is an 8-to-4 system. There's no after 4:30 or after 4:30, let's say in general, everything shuts down until the next day, which is ridiculous. At least you should have 2 or 3 people working at the registration office dealing with things like certificates, as they do in other countries. Not necessarily bigger than Barbados, but that's the way it's done.
Mr. have raised the issue. I'm sure that somewhere along the line we will make a very important discussion. And I believe, I said earlier, I think it's the Ministry of Health and those persons responsible, not the minister. And I'm sure that somewhere along the line that this case of my connection, which I am involved in.
We've got you with the case. We've gotten the information on the case. But this issue that has been raised by Mr. Wilson is one that is kind of like under the radar. Because when we talk about doing business in Barbados and the ease of doing business, in many instances, it is not applied to something like this, you know. We are applying it to somebody applying for documents to set up a company and that sort of thing. So effectively, you're saying to us, look at this particular area because it touches a lot of people. How does it impact on your business overall, Mr. Wilson?
Well, it impacts on our business because it can be frustrating for families not getting certificates on time. It's very frustrating for families, and it's frustrating for us. They'll say sometimes, well, Wilson, take a long time to get the certificate. If it was Belmont, they would have gotten it before. If it was Jones, they would have gotten it before. That happens too. Some people are not understanding. But the problem is the system that we have is such a slow system and a system that really needs upgrading. We need to do better business in Barbados. We need to do a faster turnaround in the things that we do.
Thank you so much. That's James Wilson, the funeral director. Down to brass tacks.